Tibetans everywhere are celebrating the 75th birthday of their spiritual and political leader, the 14th Dalai Lama, the man who's championed their cause and helped spread Buddhism around the world. But as the Dalai Lama ages, many have begun to wonder what will happen to the 150,000 Tibetans living in exile when their leader dies. Increasingly, the answer depends on how the countries where Tibetan refugees live respond to growing political pressure from China. Last October, and again in March, reporter Greg Bruno traveled to India and Nepal to investigate how Chinese influence is shaping the lives of Tibetans far away from their ancestral homeland, which is under Beijing's control. He filed this story.
The climb to Pasang's meditation retreat is, quite literally, breathtaking. Eagles soar in the cool, dry air, and sheep graze on tufts of grass, clinging to the snowy Himalayan foothills. It's a warm, sunny day in the Indian village of Dharamsala, and from up here, a mile above the Kanger Valley, the Tibetans' long struggle with China seems an afterthought. Instead, it's precisely what Pasang reflects on.
I'm a very small Buddhist follower. I have no ideas of big thinking, but I try to always practice Buddha Dharma. I hope to expose Buddha Dharma all over the world.
Pasang sits in the corner of a small, dark cave tucked among some pine trees. Sunlight from a single window illuminates his saffron robes, and his long black hair betrays his status as a lay follower, not a monk. Pasang's journey is as unlikely as his appearance. For 6 years, he served in the All-Tibetan Security Force within the Indian Army, training to use guns to take his country back from China. That was a decade ago. And today, Pasang is training his mind to focus on compassion for his enemies, not violence. But even after 9 years of meditating, he admits Buddhism might not be Tibet's best hope. Like many young Tibetans, Pasang is frustrated with China's refusal to seriously negotiate, and he says the day may come when he's willing to ditch his robes and again take up arms.
Yeah, definitely angry.
Angry. Younger generation Tibetan people have this. All want war. Frustration. A lot of frustration.
Frustration. A lot of frustration.
Dharamsala is the heart of Tibetan exile. When I first came here 10 years ago, I found that people shared a common vision for Tibet's future. Trust the Dalai Lama. And one day, Tibet will be free, or at the very least, sovereign. In many ways, what China did or didn't do was of little consequence to these refugees. But after 5 decades in exile, and with few signs that Beijing is willing to budge on its One China policy, Tibetans here are getting restless. Many accuse China of pressuring them to give up their traditions and their dreams of independence. For Tibetans in exile, China seems to be everywhere.
This is television from the Tibet Autonomous Region based in Lhasa. And this one in Chinese comes from Amto, what the Chinese call Qinghai Province, and most probably from the provincial capital, Sinan.
Tupten Sampil is the chief spokesman for the Tibetan government in exile. He says Chinese propaganda is now as close as the knob on one's television set.
Well, the life in Tibet, they portray it as happy, singing, dancing minorities who are blessed by the Chinese communist rule. I mean, there's no negative news at all. Even the weather seems sunny and no wind.
I'd been hearing about China's growing influence on Tibetans in exile for a number of years. So I went to several Tibetan communities in India and Nepal to see for myself. I wondered how China's influence machine was operating beyond Beijing's borders. Sampil sums up what I found.
China is increasing its criticism, allegations, and accusations against His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, and the Tibetan administration here.
In Dharamsala last fall, I asked the Dalai Lama whether he's alarmed by the stepped-up criticism and pressure from China.
Of course, obviously, I said the totalitarian regimes of pressure everywhere, even in the United States also. So I think both India and Nepal receiving some special blessing from Peking. That's quite clear. But then the situation overall in Nepal, not very settled, not very sort of stable. So a lot of problems. So the Chinese pressure, Chinese communist pressure, is more effective. Like that.
As the Dalai Lama suggests, India has been able to deflect some of this pressure. That's not the case in Nepal, home to the world's second largest concentration of Tibetan refugees. During the week of March 10th, the day Tibetans everywhere commemorate their failed 1959 uprising against the People's Republic of China, Nepali police fanned out across the capital, Kathmandu, to enforce bans on public protests. During a gathering at the famed Bodhinath Stupa, I watched truncheon-wielding police in riot gear push and drag Tibetan refugees off the jail. Dozens of Tibetans were arrested just for shouting anti-Chinese slogans. In one baton charge I witnessed, the thwack of bamboo sticks could be heard slapping across the backs of saffron-clad monks and teenagers. Nepal doesn't hide what it's doing. Anti-China activities are not permitted on Nepali soil. But restrictions go beyond free speech. Many younger Tibetans in Nepal have no papers to work legally. They can't travel abroad either. The analysts I spoke to blame China for this crackdown.
So Nepal government is like this. One eye closed, one eye open. And Tibetan issue is a big bargain for them. During the last 2 years, the Chinese officials are very much coming here, paying visit every time, promising so many things like hydro power, roads. These all are due to the Tibetan issue, the bargain they have.
Tashi Punstok is a member of the Tibetan Youth Congress, one of the most outspoken youth groups advocating for full Tibetan independence. When I called him the day before the protests, he insisted we talk in secret, on top of a nondescript hotel in a heavily populated part of Kathmandu. He said he worried spies might be watching him.
In Kathmandu, if you are organizing rallies, we have to get permission from the authorities. But we organize without permission. Because if we go to ask for permission, they won't allow us. So sometimes we clash with the police. And we have to talk, negotiate, then again cancel the program.
So getting arrested, though, is no big deal?
When we protest, like, if you get arrested, 10 to 15 people, then the police will harass you, they'll beat you very badly. If you are arrested, like, around 100 to 50 people, they don't have space to keep that much detainee inside Nepal. They'll keep you on the football pitch ground, because they cannot hold this much. And we are also not allowed food, water, by the Nepalese authority.
Tashi Punstok is just a few years out of high school, but political pressure is also hitting even younger Tibetans. At one Tibetan school I visited, students had been told not to sing their national anthem. The request was made by Nepal's Maoist Party, believed to have close ties to China's leadership. But when I talked to Jampa Punstok, the longtime principal of the school, I discovered that rules meant possibly to placate China aren't always followed.
So they say, the Maoists say, you can't sing the Tibetan national anthem. You only can sing the Nepali national anthem.
Yeah. This is a native, not allowed to national anthem. Just so only singing the one national anthem.
Do you listen to that?
No. Now we do the two national anthem. That we do there. No listen.
Attention! Tibetan national anthem begin.
Hearing Tibet's national anthem, it's clear that not all Tibetans are giving up their dream of a free Tibet, despite China's steady encroachment into their daily lives in exile. Some remain optimistic, but others want to take a more active role in resisting China. Back up the mountain inside his meditation cave, Pasang is struggling with such passive resolve. One day, he says, China's long shadow might cause him to snap. He switches to Tibetan to explain his feelings.
It's natural when somebody forcefully takes your country back and occupies it, and even does harm to the people. It's natural that everybody will feel angry. In future, now I'm not totally devoted to Buddhism.
And
War? I'm ready for war. Not totally decided to Buddha disciple. This freedom, I really want freedom.
Everyone freedom.
Our story about Tibetan exiles was produced by Greg Bruno, a staff writer for the Council on Foreign Relations. Research support for the story was provided by the Investigative Fund at the Nation Institute. Thanks also to Champa Kedu for his translation.